says that Avraham Avinu rushed out to greet these guests and brought them under a tree to eat. On the surface, it doesn't seem like that was the high-grade Hachnosis Orchim. Avraham Avinu had a very luxurious home, air-conditioned, and he could have brought his guests inside and treated them royally. If I would bring guests home and leave them outside under a tree, my wife would have my head. What kind of host are you? You would think, okay, maybe Avraham Avinu messed up. Maybe he should have done better. Maybe he should have brought them in the house. But Chazal say that in the schus that Avraham Avinu put these guests under the tree, we had the mitzvah of sukkah. We were zochet to the mitzvah of sukkah from Avraham Avinu putting his guests under the tree. So it must have been something special. So why taka did Avraham Avinu put his guests under the tree and not bring them into his house? Second question is, Avraham Avinu is the archetype of chesed, the amud ha-chesed. Chesed, the Michtam Eliyahu says, means being a giver and not a taker. Avraham Avinu was the giver, not a taker, represented by the fact that when Melech Sodom offered him all the spoils of the war, he said, I won't take a shoelace from you. No one's going to say they made Avraham Avinu rich. I don't take, I only give. That's very nice. But Avraham Avinu did a nice job of taking other times. He took presents from Paro in last week's Sedra. According to some Mefarshim, when Malki Tzedek came out with wine and bread, he gave Avraham Avinu Meiser from everything that he had. And Avraham Avinu took it. And this week's Sedra, Avraham Avinu takes presents from Avimelech. So out of four times, three times Avraham Avinu is a taker, and one time he doesn't take. So where's this big chesed? Beyond that, if we think about this Michtam Eliyahu, we can bring it to an absurd conclusion. The Michtam Eliyahu says that people should condition themselves to be the kind of people that are givers and not people who are takers. Now, if we all do that, then who are we going to give to? Somebody has to take in order for me to give. So we're going to have at least somebody volunteering to be the token taker so everybody else can be givers. So how is it possible that everybody should be givers? And nobody should be a taker? There's inevitably going to have to be takers in this world. So are they doomed not to be Bali Chesed? In order to explain all of this, I want to explain to you that Chesed and giving is not necessarily judged by who is handing over and who is receiving. Sometimes the person who hands over is in fact the taker and not the giver. And sometimes the person who receives is in fact the giver and not the taker. Let me give you first an example of where somebody appears to be the giver and really is a taker. And then we can understand Avraham Avinu and the Malachim and the guests outside, and then we'll understand the other times where Avraham Avinu took. I'll give you an example from my experience as a Rav. Sometimes people are in the hospital and people want to come to visit them to mekayim the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. They come to the hospital and they find that the person they came to visit is asleep. Now, one of the most difficult things to do in a hospital is get to sleep. First of all, you're sick. Sick people usually don't sleep well. Secondly, hospitals don't let you sleep. If you finally get to sleep, they wake you up to take sleeping pills so you can go to sleep. So, if somebody already is sick and in the hospital and he's asleep, that's probably what he wants. Doesn't want to be woken up. But what a chutzpah. I came to fulfill a mitzvah, Bikur Cholim. And you're asleep? Where was my mitzvah? So I find that more refined people send the nurse in to see if the person's really asleep. Meaning, could you please wake them up because I'm here. Less refined people walk into the room, knock over a chair or table, make a racket, the person wakes up, and they say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to wake you. Of course you meant to wake them because you want to fulfill your mitzvah, Bikur Cholin. And how are you going to do that if they're asleep? Now, in certain instances, Taka, the person would like to be woken up. They would rather have visitors than be all alone and even be asleep. But under most circumstances, unless you know differently, I would assume that the person would rather sleep now and come back again, visit me some other time, leave me a note that you were here, but don't wake me up. In that situation, the person who's visiting the sick appears to be a giver. He's Baal Chesed. He's involved in the mitzvah of Chesed, of visiting the sick. But what is really the story? What's really the story is that this person is the taker, and the sick person's the giver. The sick person is enabling this person to get a mitzvah, Bikur Cholin. I am using you to get a mitzvah. So I'm taking from you, even though it appears like I'm the Baal Chesed and I'm giving. So here's a case where a person appears to be the giver and he's really the taker. Bottom line, if a person really wants to do a chesed, he should make sure that he accommodates the chesed to the needs of the recipient and not his own needs. Avraham Avinu encountered three people who were in a rush. He had to run after them and stop them in the way. They weren't idling around, they were rushing by. That's the impression they gave. And Avraham Avinu ran after them, stopped them, and begged them to come into his house. If you've ever been in a rush, you had to make an appointment, catch a plane, and somebody says, could you just stop in my house for a minute? You know that every minute, every second is oppressive, because you never know if you're going to get out of there on time. Once you enter somebody's house, you're finished. You can't just pick yourself up and walk out. And therefore, you're constantly apprehensive. I'm going to make my appointment. I'm going to catch my plane or what. And I can't. It's not nice just to pick yourself up and walk out of somebody's house. So Avraham Avinu knew that if Taka were in a rush, it would not be to their best advantage to invite them into his house, because all it would do is make them sit there apprehensive every moment. When are we going to get out of here so we can get on our way and not miss the appointment we have or whatever? So therefore, Avraham Avinu said, look, you appear to be in a rush. I would look like a much better host if I invited you into my house and set a table and let you sit down. But that would be for my sake, that I should appear to be a nice host. But if you're in a rush, for your sake, I'm going to leave you out under the tree. You have to leave, pick yourselves up and go. You're not walking out of my house, you're just walking out of my yard. It's not the same thing. And it could be, that's why he offered them milchiks and then fleishiks. He said like this, if you're really in a rush, then I have a dairy meal ready to eat, eat and run. But if you're not really in a rush, you only made it appear like you're rushing, but you didn't want to bother me, but you have plenty of time, then I have a fleishik meal being prepared, and if you're more hungry than in a rush, wait around, there'll be a nice meat meal, but it takes time to prepare. So Avraham Avinu offered them whatever was best for them. You're in a rush, you're more concerned about hurrying than eating, here's milchiks, eat and run. You want to wait around, there's fleishiks, can have a meat meal. So Avraham Avinu accommodated his chesed to the recipient, not did it in a way that he used the recipient to make himself a nice host. In that schus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu accommodated the mitzvah of sukkah to us. The mitzvah of sukkah really commemorates the Anani HaKavod. But Anani HaKavod are for malachim, for people on a high level. We can't really appreciate living in Anani HaKavod. We need to see something, walls, a roof, something. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the mitzvah of sukkah, not just the Anani HaKavod, but he gave us real sukkahs that we could appreciate it too. Not only on his level, on our level. To accommodate the chesed to us, not just to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu's sake, he could have just given us Anani HaKavod. But for our sake, we're human beings. We need to see something. He gave us real sukkahs also. That was in the schus that Avraham Avinu was able to accommodate his chesed to the needs of the recipient and not just to make himself look like a good host. Those are instances where a person can be the one who is giving out and really he's the taker. And you have to know whether you are giving out for the sake of the person who's receiving or you're giving out for your own sake. How about the other way around? Where a person receives, but he's really the giver. There are three possibilities of how a person can be a receiver and be considered a giver. First possibility, you receive in order to give. If people don't take anything in this world from anywhere, from anyone, then they'll have nothing to give to other people. They'll never be able to do chesed. If you don't have the wherewithal to do chesed, then you won't be able to do chesed. So, inevitably, a person has to take where he deserves to take, where he's taking what's coming to him, if his intention is then to be able to use that for other people's sake, then the taking itself is part of the giving. Example. Remember years ago, I saw the Satmar Rebbe, the old Satmar Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And I remember I was a teenager and I watched Hasidim come for brachas, kvitlach, and he had a lot of rich Hasidim. He wore a robe with big bulging pockets and they used to give him money. $100 bills, $50 bills, not $1 bills. And he had pockets bulging with $150 bills. I remember thinking to myself, when I grow up, I'm going to be a Rebbe. This is a great, great job. And then I saw that he didn't keep that money. Poor people came to him. He reached his hand into his pocket, didn't even look to see what he's taking. Picked up a handful of bills, gave it to the poor person. Another poor person picked up another handful till his pockets were empty. Then they began to fill up again from the people, the rich people who came for brachas. He wasn't a taker. He was a clearinghouse. He didn't take any of it for himself. He took in order they should be able to give. He didn't have any money of his own to give. But people gave, and he put it in his pocket. He took it out of his pocket and gave it to somebody else. He took what was rightfully coming to him. People wanted to give him, and he gave it away. So he took in order to give. It's interesting that chesed is represented by a lev tov. One of the explanations of what the midah of lev tov is, about chesed. The reason I think is because the heart represents the giver. Because the heart pumps blood to the entire body. So it gives life to the entire body. But there's only one problem. If you know biology, the heart receives blood from the entire body too. Right? The blood comes from the entire body into the ventricles of the heart. And then it's pumped into the auricles, into the, what's it called, into the lungs. And from there it's pumped, after it's oxygenated, pumped to the rest of the body. So why is the heart considered a giver more than a taker? It takes in as much blood as it gives out. So why is it a giver, not a taker? The answer is very simple. The blood the heart takes from the body is not for its own sake. That is not the blood that the heart lives on. The blood the heart lives on comes into arteries that supply the heart with blood on the outside of the heart. The blood the heart takes in to the ventricles and the auricles, that blood has nothing to do with the heart itself. In that respect, the heart only acts as a pump. It receives the blood from the body for no purpose of its own, only to pump it to the lungs so it can be oxygenated, so it can repump it back to the body with oxygen. So the heart takes as much blood as it gives out, but the purpose for taking is in order to give out. So taking is part of the giving, if that's the reason why you're taking. That's why Avraham Avinu took from Paro. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Avraham Avinu that he'd make him a rich man. And Avraham Avinu had nothing. There was a famine. He went down to Mitzrayim with nothing. He had students to support. He had a wife to support. He had slaves to support. He couldn't pay his hotel bills, Chazal say. He had to take it on credit. He owed the money for the hotels he stayed in on the way down to Mitzrayim. And all of a sudden, Paro takes his wife and willingly wants to save face and give him presents. And Avram realizes that this is the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making him a rich man. There's a famous joke of a person who is in a flood, standing on the roof of his house, and the water is up at his ankles and his knees, and he prays, God, please save me. All of a sudden, a helicopter comes by, and they wave to him. She'd grab onto the ladder, and says, no, 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 I'm waiting for God to save me. A boat comes by, and he waves it off, and finally the waters inundate him, and he drowns, and he goes to the next world, and he comes before God, and he says, God, why didn't you save me? He said, I sent you a boat, I sent you a helicopter, what more could I do? So Avraham Avinu did not expect the Rabban Shalom to send him care packages from the heavens to make him rich. He expected him to find ways to make him rich in a natural way. So the way that Avraham understood that God is making him rich is Paro is giving him these presents. And he can't refuse them, because other people are going to suffer if he refuses them. How is he going to pay his debts? How is he going to support his students? And this money Paro willingly offered him, and it was coming to him. So he took it. He took it, though, in order to be able to give, in order to pay his debts, in order to support his family. That's not taking. That's giving. The purpose of the taking is to be able to give. That's called giving. There's another possibility of how taking can be really giving. And that is the following. When I first became a rabbi many, many years ago, so I was young and I decided that I was going to be a tzaddik. And I wasn't going to take anything from anybody, no presents, no tips, no extra things. I got a salary from my shul and that's it. People offered me presents, or they offered me like mechiras chametz to give me money. I wouldn't take it. And this lasted about 2-3 months. People came back from Eretz Yisrael and they said they brought the rabbi a present, and I'm told that I'm sorry, but my policy is I don't accept presents. Thank you anyway. People wanted to give me money. They had a simcha, whatever. I told them, I'm sorry, but I get a salary. I don't accept any money. About 3 months into my rabbonis, one of my elderly balabatim asked to speak to me. He said, Rabbi, you'll forgive me if I'm a little blunt, but I have to tell you something. You think you're a big tzaddik that you're refusing all these presents that people are offering you. But do you know you're insulting these people? They want to give you a present. It's a covet for them. And you're basically telling them that your presents mean nothing to you, and you're not giving them the respect and the honor of accepting their present. Didn't take too much to convince me, and from then on I took presents. But he was right. He was right. There's even a halacha that's built on this. The halacha goes like this. In order to effect a marriage, a man has to give a woman something of value. If the woman gives the man something of value and says, Hare ata mekudash li, there's no marriage. The marriage has to be the man affects the marriage, not the woman. However, there is an exception. There's a case where a woman can give a man something, and he can say, Hare at mekudeshesli, with what you gave me, and she's married. How is that? The Gemara says, by an Adam Chashuv, a very important person who doesn't usually accept presents, and if he takes a present, it's a real honor for the person who gave it. President, a king. They don't take presents from everybody. And people are willing to spend money to get people to convince them to accept their present. So it's a commodity, it's worth money. So if a woman gives a man like that a present and he accepts it, she would have spent money to get somebody to convince him to accept the present. So accepting that present, the honor that she gets by him accepting the present, is worth money. So if he says, with that honor that I gave you by accepting your present, which is something that has a market value, I am marrying you, it's a good marriage. Why? Because even though the man is accepting the present, he's giving honor, an honor that has a value to it, a monetary value, to the woman, because he's giving her the honor of accepting. He doesn't accept presents from everybody. He's an important person. I remember somebody once gave me, here in Eretz Israel, a present of some ties. Now those ties, I wouldn't be caught dead in. And I didn't know what to do. On the one hand, I didn't want to refuse them. I didn't want to insult the person. On the other hand, I knew that he'd be waiting for me to wear these ties, and I wouldn't be caught anywhere in public with these ties on. Then I figured out what I could do, and at least make him think that I wore the ties and appreciated them. I wore them on Purim when I delivered Shalach Manos to him. For Purim, they were perfect. They really fit for Purim. And that's the only time he ever saw me in the ties. He didn't realize I don't wear them any other time. So he got the covet that he wanted, that I wear the ties that he gave me. So sometimes a person can accept something, but the reason he's accepting it is not because he wants to take from the other person, because he wants to give the other person the honor of taking his present. The other person is really the one who is receiving by giving and having the person accept his present. That's why Avraham Avinu accepted the presents from Avimelech in this week's Sedra. Avimelech did something that he was terribly embarrassed about. He took Sarah, thinking that she was only Avraham's unmarried sister, and didn't bother to find out if she was also his wife. And Avimelech was a tzaddik, was a Yirei Shamayim. Can imagine the embarrassment. And he wanted to make it clear that Avraham and Sarah had no complaints. They had no hard feelings. So he gave Avraham money. He gave Sarah presents. If they would have refused it, what would that have said to Avimelech? Keep your presents, because we have complaints against you, have made Avimelech feel terrible. By accepting them, they gave Avimelech the feeling that bygones, let bygones be bygones. We accept your present. We understand you did this not knowingly, and we have no complaints against you. And Avimelech was able to save face. So Avraham accepted. It looked like he was a taker, but in fact Avraham was giving Avimelech covet. If he had not accepted it, he would have harmed Avimelech. So who was the benefactor over here? Who was the one, the beneficiary? Avimelech. And Avraham was the benefactor. Avraham was the one who gave, even though he's the one who was receiving. And there's one third instance where a person can receive and be the giver. And that's the following. In every relationship, there is the one who gives and the one who takes. And usually it's a give and take relationship. Sometimes one gives, sometimes the other one gives. Every relationship is like that. There is one exception. It's called the Jewish woman. Jewish woman is the perennial giver, martyr. She never wants to take for herself. Right? This is a hallmark of Jewish women, Jewish mothers, Jewish wives. They are martyrs. Right? If you have 18 portions of food and three people sitting at the table, a husband, wife, and a child. The wife says, no, I don't want to eat. Let my child eat. My husband eat. But there's 18 portions. If you all eat what's it called, six portions, there's going to be a leftovers. No. Right? She has to be a martyr. Now, on the surface, that's very nice, to be a martyr and to always want to give and never want to take. But there's something wrong about that. And that is that in a relationship, if you are always the giver and never the taker, that means that you make it impossible for the other side of the relationship to be a giver. And that's very demeaning. You reduce the other partner to a constant taker. And that is a very demeaning thing. So sometimes you have to take in order to enable the other person to give. Because you want not to be the only giver, you want to enable them to also be givers. And if you don't take, they're not going to have anybody to give to. So therefore, it's not good to be a martyr all the time. It's good to let the other side of the relationship give sometimes and that necessitates you taking. That's why Avraham Avinu took from Malkitzedek. Malkitzedek had Meiser. He was looking for a Kohen. There weren't too many Kohanim around. Avraham was the Kohen. If Avraham didn't take it, Malkitzedek would not have been able to give Meiser. So Avraham took to enable Malkitzedek to be able to give. Those are the three instances in my mind where a person can be the receiver, but he's really the giver. So we have instances where a person gives out and he's really the taker, and there's instances where a person receives and he's really the giver. So therefore, inevitably, there are going to be people who need to take and people who need to give. But everybody can have the right kavana and always be the one who is giving, even if it necessitates them to receive. Okay. Next. Says that Sarah hears that she's going to have a baby, and she laughs. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu rebukes her through Avraham Avinu. Loma zetzachaka Sarah? Why did Sarah laugh? Doesn't she think it's possible that I should make her have a baby? And then, worse than that, Avraham Avinu confronts her, and Sarah denies it. I didn't laugh. And the Rabbanu Shem has to say, no, you did laugh. What's going on? And also, when Avraham Avinu, in last week's Sedra, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him that he's going to have a child from Sarah, he also laughed. The Rabbanu Shem didn't rebuke him, didn't say anything to him. Why Sarah yes and Avraham not? So there are many answers. Let me give you an array of some of them. One answer is that Avraham Avinu's, there's two kinds of laughter. There's laughter out of happiness, and there's laughter out of incredulity. Something like that. It's incredulous. Right? I'm laughing because it's ridiculous. The Ribbono Shel Olam sensed in Avraham's laughter total simcha. He knew that the Ribbono Shel Olam could do it. He knew that he meant it, and therefore he laughed out of simcha. There's nothing to give him mussar about. Sarah also laughed out of simcha, but a little bit that was there of the Ribbono Shel Olam sensed that she thought this was impossible. She laughed out of laughing because this is incredulous. She was happy, but she also laughed like people laugh at something that can't be. That's funny. That's comical. Sarah herself didn't perceive that her laughter was anything more than simcha. She didn't perceive that there was that little bit comical kind of laugh mixed in. That's why she denied it. I didn't laugh like that. The Rabbanu Shem said no. I'm telling you, I sense that kind of laughter. That's one answer. Different kind of laughter. Another answer they say is that Avraham Avinu had already told Sarah what the Ribbono Shel Olam told him. So Shaila, whether he told her or he didn't tell her. This is the first time she's hearing it, the second time. Some learn that Sarah already heard this from Avraham before. It's the second time she's hearing it. The second time you don't laugh. The first time, it's a shock. You could laugh. The second time, not. Another answer, they say. Sarah Imenu already saw the beginning of a miracle. Avraham also laughed because he thought it was incredulous. But it's okay. The Maisa, what's it called, to hear that you're 99 years old and your wife is 90 and you're going to have a kid, right? You're allowed to laugh and think that it's incredulous. But if you already see the miracle starting, Sarah Imenu, it said, returned to her youth, right, and she became a Nida that day already. So she saw already that something's happening. She's returning to the ability to have children. So what are you laughing about? Avraham didn't see any miracles, so he had the right to laugh. Sarah saw the beginning of the miracles. She didn't have a right to laugh. Others say that Enoch Inami, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, didn't give Avram Musar, because he would have also said the same thing. I didn't mean to laugh that it's incredulous, I just thought it was happy. So Avram Avinu waited till Sarah did the same thing. When somebody else does something, then you could see it. You don't see it in yourself, but you see it in somebody else. I think the Baal Shem Tov says, sometimes a person doesn't have Avera, and the Rabbanu Shem waits and lets him see somebody else do that same Avera. And he judges that other person, because he's objective when it comes to the other person, and judges him that he did something wrong. And that judgment goes on himself. Because on yourself, you're very subjective. You're biased. You don't see it. But in somebody else, you can see it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu waited, didn't give Avram Musar, because he knew that Avram would say, I never did that. That's not how I laughed. But he let Sarah laugh. And Avram saw Sarah's laughing, and he understood that there was a little bit of that incredulous laugh in there. And then the Rabbanu Shem told Avram, he didn't tell Sarah. Why did Sarah laugh? Meaning to hint to Avram, it's the same thing you did before. Now you can see it, then you couldn't. So he was giving Avram Musar through Sarah. So the question is no question. Both Avram and Sarah got Musar for the laughing. Not only Sarah, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu waited to give Avram the Musar until he saw by Sarah what she did too. Others say that... Okay, I think that's enough. Okay, yeah, there's so many other things here. Okay, next. The question is, how did Sarah laugh? How did she not? What should she have done? The Ramban says that the reason Sarah laughed is because she didn't hear it from the Rabbanu Shel Olam. She didn't hear that the Rabbanu Shel Olam told her she'd have a child. She didn't know they were malachim. She thought she had three Arab guests, right, who are eating by this old couple. And now they want to give them a bracha, you know, out of thanks for the meal. So what bracha they give? Mirtz Hashem, next year you should have a child. She laughed. That's the bracha. Give me a bracha that by next year I should still be alive. Have my teeth. Right? I could see. Next year I'll have a child. She laughed. So what was wrong? Right? It's a bunch of Arabs giving her a bracha that was totally inappropriate. The Ramban says what she should have said is, Amen, from your mouth to God's ears. It's impossible. It's not impossible. If you think that by the Rabbanu Shel Olam it's difficult to make a 90-year-old woman have a child, then there's something wrong with you. The same Rabbanu Shel Olam can make a 90-year-old woman have a child and a 30-year-old woman, a 20-year-old woman have a child. So Sarah should have said, Amen, halavai, not laugh. But you can understand why she laughed. I mean, the scenario she had was not that the Rabbanu Shel Olam was telling her she'd have a child. It was three Arab guests giving her a bracha at the end of the meal. Right? It's a very inappropriate bracha. That was the laughter. Okay. Next. Avraham Avinu davens for Sodom. 50 tzaddikim, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10. Must have taken him a while to daven. Why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu stop him and say, Avram, I know where you're going. There aren't 10 tzaddikim in Sodom. I already checked this out. I'm not going to destroy them without having checked it out. So I know that you're getting to ask me if there are 10 tzaddikim. There aren't 10 tzaddikim. So don't waste your time. You have more important things to do, Avram Avinu. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu let Avram waste his time and daven for something that he knew, that the Rabbanu Shel Olam knew, could not be, and didn't stop him in the middle and tell him to go do something more productive? Second question is, and they're not necessarily related and they don't have to have the same answer, but you can. How in the world is Avram Avinu davening? Didn't he think the Rabbanu Shel Olam checked this out? God, would you kill this? Would you destroy the city if there were 50 tzaddikim? God said, oh, I never thought about that. I have to check and see if there's 50 tzaddikim. What do you mean? Didn't Avraham Avinu know that if the Rabbanu Shel Olam is destroying the city, he's checked out every avenue and there's no schus? So what's Avraham Avinu bringing up? And what if there's 40? What if there's 30? What if there's 20? Do you think that God ignored that? And he needed Avraham Avinu to tell him, well, maybe there's 30, let's go check. The Rebbe Moshe obviously is ready to destroy the city. He's investigated everything, and they destroyed it, deserved to be destroyed. So it's davening. So the first question can be answered in the following way. Why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu stop? Why did he permit him to waste his time? So the Maril Diskin says the following. He says that Ein Hachinami, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that Avram Avinu's tefillah would not save Sodom. But no tefillah goes not unanswered, but goes without making an impression. A tefillah is a force in nature. It's a force in nature. And it's never lost. It may not have achieved what Avraham Avinu wanted it to achieve, but it created a reservoir of power that the Jewish people can call upon for all generations. Those tefillahs that Avraham Avinu made for Sodom, we have the benefit. A similar maisa that brings out this point, my Rosh Yeshiva of Boris Sorotskin Zatzal, died at a young age. The last 2 weeks of his life, his wife, Olea Shalom, was the principal of Yavna High School in Cleveland. And the girls volunteered to say Tehillim around the clock in shifts the last 2 weeks of his life. And they did. 24 hours, 7 days a week, there were girls from the high school saying Tehillim. And he died. 2 weeks later, he died. During the Shiva, she called all these girls together, and she said to them, you probably feel that your tefillahs went unanswered, that you wasted your time because my husband died. But that's not true. Your tefillahs had an effect. It didn't have the effect we would have liked it to have, to save my husband's life. But who knows what effect it had on my husband's neshama? Who knows what effect it may have had on saving somebody else's life? Who knows that those tefillahs aren't hovering in the air, and 20 years from now somebody's going to need a Yeshua, and those tefillahs are going to affect it? No tefillah is lost. It's energy, spiritual energy. It remains. It's not lost. And if it doesn't help now, it'll help sometime later. If it doesn't help in the way we think it's going to help, it'll help in some other way. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't stop Avram from davening, because even though he knew that the result vis-a-vis Sodom would not occur, but the tefillos were for the sake of Klal Yisrael. We have that power as part of our heritage and legacy. That is one answer. The answer to the second question, which will answer the first one also in a different way, could be the following. Avram Avinu was not davening to save Sodom. That's not what was happening here. And it's very similar to something else in the Torah where you can ask the same question. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu that he has been chosen to be the redeemer of Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I think that's bad choice. First of all, I don't think the Jewish people are fit to be redeemed. And secondly, who am I to redeem them? Now, that sounds very nice and humble, but if you think about it, it's a tremendous chutzpah. Who are you to argue with God? God said, right, I've considered all the options, and you are the one. And Moshe says, I think you made a bad choice. Look at a chutzpah. The Rebbe Moshe says, you're the choice. Moshe should have said, look, I don't understand it, but, you know, if you say so, where do you come to argue with God? God says, you're the choice, and I say, I don't think so. Oh, I can't talk so much, and every excuses. And the Rav Hashem patiently answers him until Moshe Rabbeinu says what appears to be the nicest thing he said, and that's what he gets it over the head. Shlach no biyad tishlach. Don't send me, send Aaron. Why? Because I'm afraid I'm going to hurt my brother's feelings. Because usually, until now, Aaron was the one sent to Bnei Yisrael, and now comes the big job, and I get it, and Aaron gets passed over. No pun intended. So, Lamaisa, what's it called? And that, the Rebbeinu Shem gets angry at Moshe Rabbeinu. So I once wanted to say the same thing over here and over there. Moshe Rabbeinu was not saying no. He said, God, I have no choice. You chose me to be the Redeemer. I'm going. No problem. But now that I'm going, I'd like to understand why me. I have a right to understand what my mission is. And it doesn't appear to me like, well, they're ready. They're not ready. I'm not the right one. Could you explain to me why? I'm not saying no. I just would like to understand why. The Nasa is there, but there's always a Nishma too. It's a mitzvah to try to understand what you're doing. You don't make that a prerequisite. I'm doing it no matter what. I'm going. But I'd like to understand why. So when I go, I understand, why me? Why are the people ready? I don't speak so well. How come you chose me? I want to know what your name is. When we get to Shmos, we'll see how it fits into the psukim very nicely. Nicer than thinking that Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to get out of the job. Same thing over here. Avram Avinu understood that this was a fait accompli, that this was it. God already decided to destroy Sodom. He said, Tzakas Sodom, right? If they don't do tshuva, they're finished. Avram wasn't arguing about that. He wasn't davening to save them when God already made a mishpat. But he was trying to understand, would you have destroyed them had there been 50 tzaddikim? Would you have destroyed them had there been 40? What about 30? What about 20? He wasn't bargaining to have them saved. He knew that it already was decided they're going to be destroyed. But would they just be destroyed even though there were 50 tzaddikim? And God ignores that 50 tzaddikim, and then I'll understand the mishpatim of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. The 50 tzaddikim can't save a city. Or no. Had there been 50 tzaddikim, they would have been saved. Avram says, I accept the fact that you're destroying them. But could you explain to me on what criteria so I will know how you function? So it wasn't really a tefillah to get something, to change something. It was a tefillah to get to know God a little bit better. And the truth is that there is tefillah. What's the beginning of our tefillah? La'olam yisader adam shvacho shel makom v'achar kach yispalo. Before you daven and ask for anything, the first three brachas, we don't ask for anything. We even have a big question, how on Rosh Hashanah and Aseres Yemei Tshuva and Yom Kippur, we say Zochreinu L'chaim when we're asking for life. There are all different answers to that. But in the first three brachas of Shemona Esrei, Avos, Gvuros, and Kedushas Hashem, you don't ask for anything. You praise God. It's only after that, Atachonen, you begin to ask. Now some people foolishly think the reason for that is that you want to butter God up before you ask him something. Oh, Rabbanu Shalom, you are so great and ha-godl, ha-gibor, ha-nora. And by the way, could you spare some money or spare some das or whatever, refuah? That's absurd. That's not the reason we first praise God and then ask for things. So why do we do that? Because part of tefillah is not asking for things. It's getting to know the Rabbanu Shalom. And in fact, even when we ask, it's to know what we can't do for ourselves and what we need the Rabbanu Shalom to do for us. And what he can do. So we're getting to know the Rabbanu Shalom's capabilities, what we can't do, what he can do, what he wants to do, what he will do. Before you ask for anything, you should know who you're asking from. What does he want from you? What does he want to give you? What can he give you? So part of the purpose of tefillah is not just to ask for things. It's to get a knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that was the tefillah of Avraham Avinu. It wasn't necessary to save Sodom. That was already a done thing. But he wanted to understand under what criteria was God destroying Sodom. Had it been this, would he have destroyed them? Had it been that, would he have destroyed them? And then Avraham Avinu knew better the ways of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. And he had to teach his family to walk in those ways. He had to know what they were. So part of tefillah is getting to know the Rabbanu Shel Olam. That's what Avraham Avinu went through. Okay. One last thing. Sodom, there's a cute medrash, but the medrash comes to teach me a tremendous lesson. The medrash goes like this. that Eliezer, Eved Avraham, once went to Sodom, and he was mugged, like any guest who ever went to Sodom. And the assailant hit him, and knocked him down, stole his wallet, and ran away. Eliezer was a gibor. He picked himself up, chased after the guy, caught him, and dragged him by the collar into court. They came before the judge in Sodom, and the Gemara says the names of the judges of Sodom were Sheker, Kozov. Those were the names of the judges. So he brought him before a judge, and the judge looks at Eliezer and says, "What do you want?" He said, "This man mugged me." He said, "Oh yeah? Did he hit you and cause you to bleed?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Very good. You owe him $50 for bloodletting." Eliezer owes the assailant $50, because in those days they used to let blood as a part of a refuah. So he made you bleed. He did you a favor, right? So $50 you owe him for bloodletting. Eliezer was not a fool. So he punched the judge in the face, made him bleed, and he said, "Whatever you owe me, pay him." So, it's a nice story, cute story about Sodom. What does it mean? What it means is the following. Don't think for a minute that Sodom was a lawless place. It wasn't a lawless place. It had laws. The laws were distorted. Human beings have the ability to distort and make lawlessness law, immorality morality, and the opposite. They don't do things that are immoral. They don't do things that are wrong. They just turn the wrong into right. In the 1960s in America, there was a revolution. The new morality. That new morality was very, very similar to the old immorality. But if you call it new morality, it's already okay. We're not being immoral. We've just changed the morals and to make it the way we want it. That's how people function. They don't create lawless societies, but they make the laws fit what they want, and that becomes the law. That becomes what's right. So that was Sodom. Sodom was not a place that didn't have laws, it didn't have judges, it was the Wild West without any law, with lawlessness. No. It was a country with judges and a court system and laws. But all of the laws were perverted. All of the laws were distorted. And that's how people can function. They don't do things that they admit are wrong. But first they make them right, and then they do them. And that's the worst kind of thing. That's why Avram said to Avimelech, "Rak ein yiras Hashem b'mokom hazeh varguni al dvarishti." You have to be a yiras shamayim not to kill somebody and take his wife? Yeah. Because if you have Yirah Shamayim, then you're afraid of a higher power. And you can't make your own rules. But if you don't fear God, you can make anything right. It can become right to kill somebody and take his wife. All you have to do is reorganize your priorities and your morals and your standards. In Nazi Germany, they made it right to kill Jews. It's okay to take little babies and smash their skulls because they reorganized their entire value system. And it became okay. Became the law. Nuremberg laws. Lawlessness, murder, became the law. That's what people have the power to do. And if there's no Yirah Shamayim, then that any person can do anything and justify it and make it lawful. That's the meaning of that.